Dateline, Hawaii, September 1943. The casualties of this war in the Pacific have taken a heavy toll on our sailors and marines. But here's a sight which should lift some spirits. We're about to show you all of the casualties from the recent invasion of the island of Quatamoto. And there he is. This is Petty Officer David Rochester, who suffered a broken arm. As you can see, he's in good spirits and is on his way to a full recovery. And this sole casualty of the invasion wasn't even received in combat. A tool broke in Rochester's hand while he was doing some maintenance on the ship's engine. The island of Quatamoto was heavily fortified by Japanese forces, and our brave soldiers thought that they were in for a bloody hard-fought battle. But shortly before the Allied forces arrived, there was an uprising, believed to be instigated by the natives of the island. With many of their fortifications demolished, and seeing the combined forces of the U.S. and Australian fleets headed their way, the Japanese abandoned the island, and the invasion was successful without firing a shot. It's a stroke of good luck, and an important step on the road to victory in the Pacific.
That was where it started. I had to write a paper for my history class, so I started watching some of the old newsreels from World War II. It was the first time I'd ever heard of Quatamoto, and it sounded like the beginnings of a paper on a subject which hadn't been beaten into the ground. The thing was, I was kind of stuck. There's not a lot of information about Quatamoto anywhere. The best I could find was a few extremely general articles online, most of which talked about World War II for all of one sentence. So, I expanded my search.
Quatamoto Office of Tourism. Gail speaking.
Hi, I'm not sure if you can help me. I'm an American University student, and I was hoping to do a paper on Quatamoto. I was looking for a historical society or something like that, but, well, your website was the only one I could find in English.
That's probably because we are the only website in English on the island. We arrange the occasional visit for tourists looking for an out-of-the-way destination. I'm guessing that's not you.
Sorry, no. College student budget.
It's actually a good thing. Right now I'd be telling you it's the wrong season to come visit us anyway. Now, we don't actually have a historical society that I know of, but let me know what you're working on, and I'll see if I can help.
Well, I wanted to find out some more about the Japanese occupation during World War II, specifically about how the Japanese fortifications were demolished before the Allied fleet arrived.
Ah, now, see, it just so happens I can help with that one. What time is it where you are?
About 5 minutes past midnight.
So college sleep schedules are still about the same as they were back in my day, then?
I guess so.
Well, good news for you, because I'm going to need you to call back in about 3 hours.
Sure, but why?
Because that's about how long before Dad gets back from fishing. He was one of the first sailors in the Allied fleet to put his foot on the beach of this island. I think that's what they call a primary source, if I remember correctly.
That would be amazing. Thank you.
Oh, don't thank me. Dad'll probably talk your ear off. And you're the one paying for the international call.
My roommates were supremely unsurprised when I set a pot of coffee to brew at 12:15 a.m. on a Thursday. I was supremely unsurprised that I only got to drink about half of it. Andy Werther was in his mid-90s, but I wouldn't have known it to talk to him, except for the fact that anyone who fought in World War II kinda has to be that old now.
Most of what we were up to at the time was protecting our shipping in the Pacific. It was dangerous, sure, but my ship wasn't involved in a lot of the island hopping that you Yanks were doing. But we were in the right place at the time to offer more hands and more guns. It was the first time any of us on the ship had gone out looking for a fight. I'm not going to lie to you, we were scared stupid. The fleet fired on the island to knock out some of the biggest fortifications. We were all set to fire the second round once we knew where the counterattacks were coming from, and then it never came. It took us a while to figure out there was no one to shoot back at us. Then we landed and we realized the fortifications had been hollowed out from the other side. I figured any place where you could show up ready to die a brave death and wind up not losing a single one of your best mates was a pretty amazing place. So, after the war, my wife and I settled down here. It's kind of my lucky island, you might say.
That's amazing.
You're not kidding. Gail pulled out my old scrapbooks and said she'd email you some of the pictures we snapped back then. Don't know if it'll help with your report, but it's nice to be able to brag about the glory days.
Oh, my professor would love that, thank you. So, did you ever talk to any of the indigenous people on the island? Did they tell you how they pushed the Japanese off?
Oh, and I had a lot of conversations with the native folks after I moved here. Taught them cricket, started up a little league, but I never asked them about driving off the Japanese, mostly because they didn't do it.
What?
The people who lived here when the Japanese came might have had a handful of rusty blunderbusses from back in colonial times. Believe me when I say this, kid, they didn't have the firepower necessary to gut those fortifications. Not sure what could have, short of a convoy of tanks.
Well, did they maybe steal some of the Japanese munitions and...
They didn't do it at all, kid. Don't get me wrong, they weren't sorry to see the back of the Japanese, but there's no way the people of Kawadamoto had anything to do with it. We never exactly figured out who did. Apparently, the night before the fleet arrived, there was a massive firefight all across the shorelines. It wasn't more than an hour or two until every Japanese soldier who was left was on a transport ship running scared from here. We always used to joke that it was the Allied forces.
Okay, but who in the Allied forces?
Not the Allied forces, kid. Alloyed forces.
Never heard of them. Who are the Alloyed forces?
They weren't anyone, kid. Just a ghost story. Every war needs a good ghost story.
It's kind of amazing to me that information about a tiny island in the Pacific was sparse and not very detailed. But the second you start looking into a ghost story, you got pages and pages of hits. I guess there's history, which is boring. There's fiction, which everyone knows is fiction. And then there are legends. Legends you're going to hear about.
Welcome to Wendy's Wednesdays of Weirdness, where if things go bump in the night, we're there to shine a light on it. Now, I say this in every episode, but based on the comment section from last week, this bears repeating. I'm not here to debunk any of the legends, speculative theories, or fringe science. I'm also not here to tell you their gospel truth. None of that is my job, okay? I give our guests the chance to present their stories their way. What you decide about whether you believe them or not, that's all on you, kiddos. So, yes, I understand that some of you thought I should have pushed back a little harder on our guest who said Chupacabra and the Jersey Devil were subspecies of each other. You found a lot of holes in that theory, and that's great. That's as it should be. It shows that you have your own thinking caps, and don't just accept everything at face value. All I'm asking is that you keep the comments civil, please. I love all my listeners, but I will permaban you from our forums in a heartbeat if you start making personal attacks. Don't make me do that, please. All right, now. Today is another installment in our Bet You Never Heard This One Before series. We're heading back in time to World War II for this one, kiddos. Joining us via internet phone is my guest, Samantha Bautista.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Now, you've got a tale of weirdness from the Pacific Theater for us, yes?
I don't know if I'd call it that, Wendy. But it was certainly not what I was expecting. My grandfather imported tea before the war, and because of that, he actually spoke Japanese. So he was a natural fit when it came to overseeing Japanese POWs. Grandma let me read through his letters. And in 1943, there were three or four of them that made reference to the metal men. It's not a perfect translation of what they actually called them, but a group of prisoners who had all been captured at the same time all spoke about the same thing. Metal war machines, which walked like men. The descriptions varied, which honestly isn't so surprising, given battlefield chaos, but they were relatively similar. 6.5 to 8 feet tall, and wide like a tree trunk. They were covered with black and dark gray paint with no markings and some kind of repeating firearms on the forearm. Grandfather and everyone else, even the other prisoners, thought this was just tall tales. The people who monitored their letters going home didn't even redact the stories. They were so unbelievable. Then another group of prisoners came in, just three or four, and they had a lot of the same stories. Grandfather talked to a midshipman on the transport that brought them in, and learned it was a rumor among the American soldiers, too. They called them the Allied forces.
Wow, that's a terrible pun! But you believe that this was more than just some shell-shocked prisoners and a rumor among the sailors?
I honestly didn't at first, but I realized I was looking at this the wrong way. From an American point of view, these were just rumors. that the Allied forces never attacked the Allies. So I went looking for reports on the Japanese side of things.
What did you find?
Well, it turns out I found my fiancé. I was doing some research in the college library, and I ended up dating a man who was learning Japanese for his degree.
Aww, congratulations.
Thank you. Anyway, with the Allied forces. Well, if this were really just a legend, you'd expect it to keep popping up everywhere. But everything that we found was really centered on particular dates. They appeared first on June 16th, where they destroyed a supply camp off the coast of China. Then on August 1st, they hit a naval repair center in the Indian Ocean and kept at least three destroyers out of action until the end of the war. Their biggest mission seems to have been driving the Japanese off the island of Kuramoto on September 3rd.
And after September 3rd?
There was only one more reference to the Allied forces, at least that I could confirm was witnessed by more than 10 people. On October 13th, 1943, the Metal Men made a raid on a Japanese supply camp. But instead of destroying the camp, they seemed intent on plundering it. They pushed their way into an ammunition supply and were attempting to hold it against the soldiers when the Japanese started using hand grenades. The munitions all exploded in a fireball you could see for miles. Amazingly, the reports indicate that the Allied forces survived the explosion and made their escape. But it was the last time they were heard from, at least as far as I could tell.
All right. Well, listeners, what do you think? Have you heard of the Allied forces before today? What are your thoughts and crazy conspiracies on this little snippet? I see we've got a question from a caller for you, Samantha. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, my name is Bill from Tacoma, Washington.
Hi, Bill. Haven't heard from you in a while.
Love your show, Wendy. My Wednesdays suck without you.
Aww.
Anyway, I had a question for your guest. So, my buddy served in the first Gulf War, and he told me about sending in guys in these, like, mechanized armor suits because of the aliens who were trying to poison the oil. So, now he's pretty sure a time rift opened up, which is why we had two presidents both named George Bush. One of them was, like, the younger self of the first Bush who got thrown forward in time. But, like, do you think those guys in the time rift went forward in the future to get their tech upgraded and then tried to get back? But they got stuck in 1943?
I
mean, there were also the black helicopters that, like, became self-aware. They got sucked into the rift at the same time. You said the robots had black paint, right?
Well, they had black paint, but I never said they were robots. I really wasn't able to determine exactly what they were.
Phil?
Yeah, Pat?
We're still paintballing this weekend, right?
I was planning to. Why?
We're heading down to Wally World after dinner, and I wanted to know if I needed to pick up more ammo.
The way you shoot? Yeah, you need ammo, and a Bible, since all you do is spray and pray.
Ha ha.
Let me know when you're going, will you? I might want to pick up some more ammo. My...
What did we say about trailing off in the middle of a sentence?
Sorry, I just...
Dude!
Sorry. Just had a thought. Let me know when you're ready to go. I didn't end up going out that night. I got sucked down a rabbit hole, which is not especially surprising. If you do a search as vague as ammunition plus 1943, you're in for a million-hit wonderland. It didn't help that I didn't exactly know what I was looking for at first. It just occurred to me that it was weird how these metal men, whatever they were, tried to take ammunition from the Japanese. Then I tried a variation on the scientific method. I came up with a hypothesis, and then I looked for evidence to support it. I made a guess that the reason they tried to take the ammo was simple. They didn't have another supply. That meant they weren't working for the military on either side. And I looked for something that fit that hypothesis until I finally found this.
A shameful case of treason has come to light. Montgomery Milton, owner of Milton Melting and Metalworks Company, was caught in the act of sabotage. Milton and four other men not yet identified were apprehended in a blatant attempt to steal valuable supplies from Muroc Army Airfield. The culprits were apprehended loading crates of stolen ammunition onto a truck. Thanks to the efforts of our brave military police, the heinous crime has been prevented. Whether this was an attempt at war profiteering or a direct act of sabotage, we can rest easy knowing our boys overseas will have the firepower they need on the road to victory in the Pacific.
This was not proof of anything. This was a coincidence. I'm sure lots of people tried to steal ammunition from somewhere during the tail end of 1943. There was a war on, and ammunition was valuable. So I dug up some more information and went on a hunt. The next morning, after my 10 o'clock class, I made a phone call. I was on hold so long, I didn't think I'd make it to my 3 o'clock class.
California Castings, this is Kathy speaking. Hello?
Hi, sorry. I was on hold really long time. I was just grabbing a drink out of the fridge. My name is Phil Conroy. The man I spoke to said he would try to get me in touch with the company archivist.
Well, if that's what he said, I don't doubt you were waiting a while. We don't have an archivist.
You must have someone who keeps track of the company history.
Perhaps there was someone with that job title 40 years ago, but since other countries can crank out finished steel products for less money than it would take us to buy the raw scrap iron, there's not a lot of room in the budget for things like keeping track of the company history.
You seem a little cynical.
They also didn't have the budget to give me customer service training. Anyway, I'm the one with access to personnel records and financial records, so I guess I'm as close to an archivist as you're likely to find. What can I do for you?
I'm a college student doing a history paper, and I had some questions about the company.
You're doing a history report on California Castings?
Not exactly, but the company is sort of involved in what I was looking into. This was back in 1943 when the name was...
Milton Melting and Metalworks. You seriously need information from 1943?
If it's not too much trouble.
I think we can safely say it is. But go ahead and ask your questions. I'll see what I can tell you.
Well, back then the owner of the business was Montgomery Milton.
I think his photo is up on a wall somewhere in the plant. I guess I can get someone to send you a copy.
Well, that would be great, but if you had any other information about him or what the company was doing at the time, I read somewhere you were building parts for the U.S. Navy?
I think we were, but I couldn't really talk about that.
It can't still be classified after all this time.
For all I know, it certainly could be. But what I mean is, I can't talk about it, because there's no way I can find any information from back that far.
And nothing about Montgomery Milton? He was arrested in 1943 for trying to steal ammunition from the army. He pled guilty to treason, but it doesn't make any sense. His oldest son died during Pearl Harbor.
I didn't know that. But I think we need to cut this conversation off now.
What? Why?
Because unless someone from legal and someone from public relations both tell me they want me to talk to a college student about how our company founder was arrested for treason against the government, then I'm just going to assume that they don't want me to talk about that.
I mean, it's all public record.
Then it doesn't sound like you need anything from me. Sorry, Phil. I'm all for higher education, but there's just no upside to this conversation. The longer I'm researching with you, the more work I'm supposed to be doing isn't happening. And it doesn't look like there's any part of the story the company would want me to help you dig out.
Okay, I guess I see that.
Good luck on your paper. Sorry I can't help and all that.
So, that's what brought me here.
That's what brought you here.
I was out of options. No one at California Castings would tell me anything, and you're Montgomery Milton's closest surviving relative. I was hoping you had more to tell me.
More to tell you about what? About my grandfather, who I saw once a year on his birthday until I was 8 before he passed away. I remember hating going into the prison with my mother. Not because it was scary, but because she hated it so much. We always went out for a fancy dinner afterwards.
That must have been nice. Speaking of which, thank you for the coffee.
You already thanked me. Look, I don't know what you were hoping for, but when your family has a traitor to the country as a patriarch, you don't tend to talk about him all that much. Even my grandfather had the grace to just plead guilty to the crime and let them throw the book at him. He wasn't exactly a forbidden topic of conversation, but sad looks and deep frowns are enough of a clue for a young girl. Even the family business changed its name before I was born, all so my grandfather would be forgotten as quickly and painlessly as possible.
I don't know if he was a traitor, though. If I'm right, he saved a lot of American lives.
You think my grandfather dressed up in a tin suit and went to fight the Japanese?
I think it's possible, yes. Look, his son, your uncle, dies at Pearl Harbor. 2 years later, he's stealing bullets from the U.S. Army. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Maybe he was angry at the military for not keeping his son alive.
Maybe, but there are other clues. For instance, he wasn't in the U.S. when the Allied forces were active. 6 months overseas.
I think he was conducting business.
In the middle of a war? I mean, Milton Melting and Metalworks was fairly big and they had some international dealings, but really? The owner of a company needed to be in the middle of a war zone on business? And then there's the other men who were caught with him, all engineers and designers who worked for his company, and every single one of them lost someone in the war.
Who didn't lose someone in the war?
Fair point. And I can tell this isn't a conversation you're enjoying, but just let me show you one more thing. This photo of your grandfather was taken in 1942. It is a puff piece on what the company was doing to help with the war effort. This photo is, well, his mugshot. Sometime between these two photos, he got some fairly severe burns. Now, remember, the last time the Allied forces were active, they were caught in a massive fireball. The metal suits kept them alive during the explosion, but I bet it didn't keep the heat out. And by the way, all the men who were arrested with your grandfather, they look the same, or worse.
I see. And of course, there's no other explanation for how men who worked around molten metal all day might have gotten burns.
Fair point again, but that's just it. It's another fair point. One more thing that could have a perfectly mundane explanation. After a while, you have to start asking yourself if the crazy explanation doesn't outweigh all the other little coincidences.
I don't see myself asking that anytime soon. Look, you're obviously a thorough investigator, and I appreciate the work you've done on this paper, but...
Oh, the paper's done.
What?
Yeah, I finished it months ago. Got an A, even though my prof thought the subject matter was outlandish. The paper wasn't about your grandfather, it was about Kawamoto and the Japanese stories of the Allied forces.
Then if you're not here for your paper...
I'm not. I'm not even a history major. I probably won't ever write a paper on World War II again.
Then why?
Because I want to know if I'm right. It's spring break. I'll be driving out to the beach after all this is done, but when I found out Montgomery Milton's granddaughter lived a couple of hours away, I had to come here first. I needed to know if I was right.
Well, you're not.
I think I am.
You think my grandfather created some kind of metal battle suits, and that he was some kind of hero who used them to fight the Japanese military in World War II. I'm telling you flat out, that isn't true.
Mrs. Cavendish.
Mel. You can call me Mel. I think this chat has been personal enough that we should be on a first-name basis.
All right. Mel. Do you know how I got an A on my paper?
Your teacher was feeling particularly generous.
No, she hated the paper. But the assignment was really about using primary sources. I managed to get in touch with Samantha Bautista, you know, from the show. She emailed me scans of all the letters her grandfather wrote home and a bunch of Japanese documents along with her translations. My professor thought the whole idea of the Allied forces was ludicrous, but I used primary sources to come to those ludicrous conclusions.
Why are you telling me this?
Well, the thing about Samantha Bautista is that she ended up writing a book. She's a surprisingly thorough researcher, but it's a fairly obscure book. Not many people have read it, but you have. It's behind you on that bookshelf. Listen, I can tell this isn't something you want out in the open, and that's your right, I suppose. Look, this has been an itch in the back of my brain for months. I'm pretty sure I know what happened, but I don't think I really understand it. Why would this be something you wouldn't want to talk about?
I don't want to talk about it because it didn't happen. But if these robot men were a real thing, and if you were talking to the granddaughter of one, and if she didn't seem all that interested in confirming your wild theory, well... Look, my uncle died when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and it's not as though the urge to pay the Japanese back for that wasn't more or less a universal thing in the States at the time. But whereas the rest of the country came together to fight back, to support the boys overseas and bring them home safe and victorious, in the story you tell, that wasn't my grandfather. My grandfather, according to your theory, kept valuable resources away from the U.S. military. He tried to steal bullets so that the guns which killed the men who took his son away would be his guns. And he didn't much care if the men on the front lines had to do without, as long as he got his own kind of vengeance. There are a lot of ways to tell your completely false story, Phil. But if you told it in such a way that my grandfather was a hero, you'd be telling a whole different kind of a lie.
I think I've taken up enough of your time. And I'm sorry.
Don't be. I hope you found what you needed. And don't take this the wrong way, but...
But you also hope to never hear from me again. Don't worry, you won't. I can stop scratching at this itch now. Thank you for the coffee, and I'll go soak up some rays now.
Enjoy the beach. Hi, Robert. It's Melanie Cavendish. I'm calling about my grandfather's estate. No, you don't need to pull up any files. I just needed one quick thing, please. I need to hear it out loud. They were melted down, right?
You have been listening to Alloys and Axis, written and directed by Dan Wenzel, produced by Seat of Our Pants Players. The newsreel was Adam Gastenge. Phil was Dan Wenzel. Gail was Liz Music. Andy was Rick Tennant. Wendy was Brianna Kuby. Samantha was Andy Gastenge. Bill was Aaron Manka-White. Pat was Michael Krellen. The radio announcer was Andrew Dell. Kathy was Rebecca Scheimer. And Mel was Jill Wenzel. Music and sound effects by www.freesfx.co.uk. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you later.